Hey, good evening, everybody. Let's get started. We're gonna run this on time. So I got a text today from somebody asking what the topic of tonight's shiur is, and I said, "You tell me what the topic of tonight's shiur should be," because I assumed it meant that he was going to come. And he told me, "Oh, this is what the topic should be," but he's not here. So I don't know. Does he get to choose? The topic he chose was Hakaras HaTov. You okay with that topic? Anyone want to switch? They said either tzedakah or hakaras hatov, right? What? I mean, whatever. I printed out one thing. I can take out my computer and pull up the other thing. It's not the end of the world. Okay, so I guess we'll talk about hakaras hatov. No one has an opinion. Okay. I normally when I give shiurim like out of my normal context. Out of my normal shul or mashir and yeshiva, it's almost always halacha shiurim. Normally, I'm always asked to give halacha shiurim. So there's like a little bit of a change because we're not doing a halacha shiur. The halachas of hakaras hatov is really a mida, and in general, midos are not halachos. They are absolutely critically important, and it could be that even b'nei Noach, who are not chayiv in mitzvos beyond the sheva mitzvos b'nei Noach, are chayiv in all midos. They also have to be humble, and they also have to be kind, and they also. But midos are not halachos in the classical, in the conventional sense, right? That a midah you would not call as an isur or a chiyuv, but midos are who we are. You know, there's a Gemara that tells us that in two different places in Shas, the Gemara talks about how we are supposed to be like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, except in one place the Gemara says, gives examples of like how you're supposed to mimic Hashem, how you're supposed to be like Hashem. So the Gemara says, "Oh, Mahu mevaker cholim, afatam mevaker cholim. Kadosh Baruch Hu was mevaker Avraham Avinu when he was a chole, so we should learn from that to be mevaker cholim. Mahu malbish arumim, just like Hashem gave Adam and Chava clothing, so we too should be malbish arumim. We should give clothing to people who need clothing. And there are people that take these mitzvos very seriously, even in the literal sense. I got a text the other day. I was very moved by it. A text from a fellow who lives in North Woodmere, and he told me that he would like to sponsor clothing for as many families as I could find who need it for Yontif. And just, they shouldn't know that it's coming from him. They should just know to go to these stores, mention Rabbi Leibowitz as if I'm doing anything, and then they'll get a free wardrobe for the whole family if they need it. That's a kiyum of Mahu Afatah, just like Hashem is Malbish Arumim. We too should be Malbish Arumim. I often tell people, you know, people sometimes say, isn't it difficult to be a rabbi? You see people at their worst. You see people when they're struggling. You see sometimes behind closed doors some of the worst averos. I say, yeah, but you also see people at their very best, right? You see the things that they're not showing the rest of the world, the chesed that's done behind closed doors. You see very inspiring things. And I guess depending on the community, sometimes you see more of the one than the other. But I'm fortunate enough to be able to see a lot more of the good than the bad. But anyway, so the Gemara says that there is this requirement, mahu afata, and all of the examples are things that you're supposed to do. You're supposed to be malbish arumim, you're supposed to be mevaker cholim, all of these kinds of things. And there's another Gemara that also says mahu afata, that whatever Hashem does, we're supposed to do as well, but it doesn't talk about things that we do, it talks about mahu Rachum, afata rachum. Hashem is merciful. We should be merciful. Hashem is kind. We should be kind. And Rav Asher Weiss points out in one of his svarim that these are two different gemaras that are based on two different psukim. The gemara actually has two different psukim that derives these different sets of examples because they mean something entirely different. The Gemara about Malbish Arumim, Mevaker Cholim, to give tzedakah, those kinds of things, the Gemara is talking about, or to be Menachem Aveilim, the Gemara is talking about Bein Adam L'Chaveru, things that one does for another person, mitzvos that a person does for another person. The Gemara that talks about Rachum and Chanun, that Gemara is not talking about mitzvos, that Gemara is talking about midos. It's talking about who we are, that we should shape our personality after what we know about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we know what we know about who he is. And that on a certain level is much bigger than a mitzvah, if you could say such a thing. Bigger than a mitzvah. A mitzvah is a particular action. Rachum Chanun, that is who we are. So it is a special opportunity to be able to talk about what is essentially a midah. Hakaras HaTov is a midah rather than a mitzvah, and therefore it really signifies who we're supposed to be. So I just want to cover four topics within Hakaras HaTov. Number one, we'll lay it all out before at the beginning. Number one, where does it come from? Right, where inside of us is Hakaras HaTov? What sort of character traits do we need to work on to get to the point of Hakaras HaTov, of fulfilling Hakaras HaTov properly? Number two, to whom? Who are we supposed to show Hakaras HaTov to? Is it only our friends, only our parents, only other people? Maybe it includes much larger groups, even some surprising groups. Number three, what kind of effect Hakaras HaTov can have on us and on society, and you know how powerful it could be. And number four, just maybe some eitzah on how to work on it, how to develop that that midah. And obviously the reason we're talking about this on Giving Day is that volunteers are being used to help raise all this money for yeshiva, and the spirit of volunteering, particularly from students of an institution, really comes from a sense of Hakaras HaTov, gratitude to the institution that has given you so much, that has given me so much, and out of a sense of gratitude to that institution, that's what drives us. That's the connection. That's why we're not only talking about tzedakah. Hakaras HaTov is really what drives us to want to do more for an institution that has given us, that has shaped us really in many, many ways. So let's start at the beginning. Where does Hakaras HaTov come from? So in general, there is a tradition that if you want to understand something, you want to understand where something comes from, you look at the first place it appears in the Torah. And the first time that the Torah teaches us about thankfulness, about being thankful, is the birth of Yehuda. When Yehuda is born, Leah says, Hapam Odeh LaHashem. That this time I'm going to be grateful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm going to be thankful. I'll give thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Medrash on the spot tells us that you can see that from the fact that Leah expresses this Hakaras HaTov, this Hoda'ah, you see it play out in her descendants. That there are certain midos that sort of get passed through the family line, and this is no exception. The Medrash tells us two examples. The Medrash tells us Yehuda, after the episode with Tamar, he declared, Vihi tzadka mimeni, that she is more righteous than I. The episode with Tamar is, I remember the first time when I was in elementary school, we never learned the episode with Yehuda and Tamar. We learned all of Sefer Bereishis, and we never learned that story. I remember, I'm not going to say what age I was when I discovered that it existed, but it was too old, and I was like, oh my gosh, when did this get here? Do people know about this story? This is unbelievable. It is an unbelievable story. So in the story with Yehuda and Tamar, he ultimately admitted that she's tzadka mimeni. And that is because Yehuda descended from Leah. Yehuda was Leah's son, and that's where he got that koach from. Second, the Medrash says, David HaMelech, in Tehillim, says, Hodu LaHashem, ki tov. I'm thankful to Hashem. Hodu LaHashem, ki tov. So that's Hakaras HaTov. Now, the problem is, one of those examples is actually an example of Hakaras HaTov, and one of them is decidedly not an example of Hakaras HaTov. Which one is an example of Hakaras HaTov? Hodu LaHashem, ki tov. Right? It actually has the word, right? Hodu LaHashem, I'm thankful to Hashem, ki tov. Yehuda says, Hi tzadka mimeni. If I were to say, what sort of character, what sort of traits do you need to have in order to own up and say, Hi tzadka mimeni, I'm the one that did the avera, she is more righteous than I. So what is it? Gratitude? Gratitude to who? Who is he grateful to? What is it? What would be the midah that you would think of?
Honesty,
good. Integrity, yeah. Anything else? Responsibility? I would say achrayus. He stands up for it. He says, you know, a lot of times people are, when rather than take a chrayus, we'll just crawl under a rock, or we'll blame other people, we'll start pointing to in every other direction. He's taking responsibility for his actions. That's what was heroic about what Yehuda did at the end. You know, you do something, and then you're embarrassed by what you've done, so you don't want to admit that it was you that did it. That's a very natural human thing. But to take a sense of achrayus. So how does the Medrash see in what Yehuda says over here a sense of hakaras hatov? So there's a famous comment that Rav Huttner had, and he writes in one of his letters where he points out that thanksgiving, hoda'ah in Hebrew, is the same word that we would use for being modeh, for admitting something. And he points out that for a person to say thank you, it needs to start with an admission. You need to admit that you're not totally independent. You need to admit that you are chaser something, you're missing something, you need the help of others, and then you can say thank you. If you think you need nothing from anybody, you don't need anything from anybody, then there's no reason to say thank you. Whatever they did is something I could have done myself, I didn't need their help, so why would I ever say thank you? Hoda'ah comes from, says Rav Huttner, the idea that I am acknowledging, I'm being modeh, that I don't have everything. And it's human nature to feel a certain sense of embarrassment when we receive the help of other people. So we have to be careful not to allow that embarrassment. You know, very often if you're embarrassed by the fact that you have to receive, so we just sort of try to convince ourselves that we didn't really receive. That we didn't, if someone feels that they have to, if a person feels that they've received so much from someone else, so that's mechayiv me to give back. And if I can't give back, then I'm embarrassed by the inequity of it, by the inequality of it, that I'm getting so much and I'm not giving back. And we have to sort of fight against that. We shouldn't minimize the good that was done for us to try to solve that inequality. And also, we have to use that feeling to try to make that an impetus to become a giver. Meaning, that's how ideally in relationships should work. Now, I once heard a great vart. I was at a Sheva Brachos years and years ago. And I think if I recall correctly, Rabbi Yecheskel Freundlich from Montreal, used to be from Atlanta, who is my chavrusa, said this word at a Sheva Brachos for Rabbi Sroli Rothwax. When Rabbi Sroli Rothwax got married, Rabbi Larry Rothwax's brother, so Rabbi Yecheskel Freundlich spoke at the Sheva Brachos and he said this Dvar Torah. So I don't know, 20-something years ago, Rabbi Yecheskel Freundlich's son is my son's chavrusa in Shalvim. And he told his son, be careful what you say in the Chavrusa, because in 20 years from now, he's going to be quoting it on Wadi Torah. So that was our experience. So what was the Vart? He said that, we derive Kiddushin, the idea that you could do Kiddushe Kesef, that Kiddushin is done with money, Kicha Kicha Mistei Ephron. That we learn the word Kicha appears in Kiikach Ish Isha, in describing Kiddushin, and in describing Kesef Asad Kach Mimeni, that when Ephron sells the Maris HaMachpela, it also has a lashon of Kicha. So everyone asks the question of all places to derive the romantic nature of marriage and how beautiful it is, what a beautiful union. The Torah, Hashem had to dafka set it up where it's to connect it to a parsha that involves burying one's wife, that involves buying, that involves dealing with a lowlife like Ephron in order to bury his wife. That's where we're going to learn Kicha Kicha, that's where we're going to learn Kesef Kiddushin from. So Rabbi Freundlich suggested, at that time he was just Josh, but Rabbi Freundlich suggested at that time that maybe the idea is that if you think about the psychology of what was going on in each person's mind, and this is like if you ever have to speak out of Sheva Brachos, back pocket, I'm telling you, this one is like, you can. It's so easy to remember, it's so easy to say, and it's like, I think it's really good. So I remember it 20 years later. I mean, it's because I say it like every 2 weeks. But he said that if you think about what was going through each person's mind as they were making that deal, here Avram Avinu is thinking, I need to buy Maris HaMachpela, which is going to be a burial place for all of the Avos V'Imahos, save for Rachel, right? All the Avos V'Imahos. It's going to be a place of tefillah for generations and generations of Klal Yisrael for thousands of years. And all this guy wants is 400 shekel kesef. I mean, that's a bargain. Right? That's a great deal. Can you imagine the value of this place? And Ephron is thinking, I got this rotten cave where you can't do anything with it anyway. It doesn't grow anything. You can't plant anything. It's a worthless piece of land. And I'm getting 400 shekel kesa for it. I'm getting a steal. Each side in the deal thought that they were getting a steal, that for what I have to offer, what I'm getting is so much better than what I have to offer. Each side felt a certain sense of inequity, but in their favor. He says, that's what we're trying to derive, kicha, kicha, mistayefa. And that's the Chachmas HaTorah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put it in such a way that when a person enters a marriage or a positive kind of relationship, a person should go in with the feeling, I can't believe I got such a steal for what I have to offer, that I managed, that my wife said yes. Like one of my rebbeim, Rabbi Yisrael Kamenetsky, would always tell us, I still, 30 years after he's married, I still can't believe she said yes. I still can't believe she said yes. Right? To have that feeling, that that I'm so lucky, and if she has that feeling too, that's great. Why does that work out so well? Because I'm always trying to become more of a giver. I use that as an impetus to want to give more, so that it will be less inequitable. And that's the idea of a person having a sense of hoda'ah, comes from a sense of acknowledging that I need someone else, that I benefit from someone else, and that ultimately leads a person to a sense of hakaras hatov. Now, but who do we have to show hakaras hatov to? And I'm taking longer than I thought to get through these different parts, so maybe we won't go through all four. But to whom do we show hakaras hatov? So the truth is that it's a little bit surprising how far this obligation goes. When you look through even Tanakh and certainly beyond, it's surprising how far it goes. Meaning, I would imagine that, of course, I have to show hakaras hatov to someone who did something nice for me. So someone gives me a gift, it's appropriate to say thank you, maybe to write a thank you note. It's a natural thing to do. They tried to do something nice for me, they did something nice for me, I received it, I benefited, and I say thank you. But it's not only that. It's not only that. It seems to be much more than that. There's a medrash that's quoted by a number of the more contemporary achronim, but it's a medrash. It's been there for a long, long time, where the medrash comments about how when Moshe Rabbeinu was running away from Mitzrayim and he saw the daughters of Yisro struggling, he heroically saved them from these predatory shepherds, and they can't wait to tell their father about their knight in shining armor who came and saved them. And what do they say? Ish Mitzri Hitzilanu. That an Egyptian man saved us. And the Medrash comments, what do you mean an Egyptian man? So the simple pshat is, Moshe Rabbeinu was an Egyptian man, right? He must have looked like an Egyptian. He grew up in the palace. But the Medrash comments that no, Moshe Rabbeinu had to flee Mitzrayim because he killed a Mitzri who was harassing an innocent Jew. And as a result of that, he had to leave, and only because he left did he happen upon these young women, and was he able to save them. And their sense of Hakaras HaTov was so great that they were grateful to the Ish Mitzri who gave his life so that they could be saved. Not that they necessarily thought that way, but that we should see it that way. That we should look at all of the events that had to land in just the right way in order for us to receive the benefit that we received. And that's how far our Hakaras HaTov has to go. The Medrash gives a mashal. It says a man was bitten by a dangerous animal and he runs to the river to wash off the venom from the bite, to clean it out. And he sees a child drowning in the river when he goes, and he saves the child. And the child says, oh my gosh, you saved my life, thank you so much. And he says, no, it's not me. It's the animal that bit me that saved your life. Meaning, it's not the animal that bit me that saved life, but to that extent that we should... But it even goes more than that. It even goes beyond that. Not only to those that have no intention whatsoever of doing kindness with us, but also in Moshe Rabbeinu's own life. Kodesh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, tell Aaron to take the stick, stretch it out over the waters of Mitzrayim. And Moshe Rabbeinu, Rashi comments, Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't do it himself. That it had to be through Aaron because the river protected Moshe Rabbeinu. River, I promise you, the river won't complain if Moshe Rabbeinu hits it. The river doesn't feel anything. The river does, but you just have to have a sense of a Hakaras HaTov even to an inanimate object. I was just in Chicago this week. I was at a Talmud's wedding on Sunday, so I went to visit Ida Crown on Monday. Once I was there, and One of my good friends, Rabbi Meir Simcha Stromer, was driving me around, and he was taking me to the different places I needed to go. And he pulled into the parking lot of the hotel where the wedding that I was going to was, and there was like an automated machine that said, "Please take your ticket," and it like shut out the parking ticket. And Rabbi Stromer took the ticket and said, "Thank you." I'm like, it's a machine, you know, it's not. And he says, "No, it's not Karas Hatov." He said, I always tell my students they should say thank you to Alexa. So, which is, you know, an interesting thing to do. You know, we're so used to, but we should at least be thankful for Alexa, you know, that we have. You know, my wife couldn't figure out once our Alexa broke, and we didn't know how to fix it. It was like it wasn't connecting or something. So, you know, she did the only natural thing. "Hey Siri, how do I fix Alexa?" And the answer was forthcoming. We should be very grateful that we have that convenience, that ability. The Medrash tells us. Let's skip the Medrash for now. There's also a well-known story, I think, of Rav Gustman's Zichron Levracha. Rav Gustman's yeshiva was built in the Rechavia section of Jerusalem, and he arranged to have a garden planted in front of his yeshiva. And every day, Rav Gustman took care of watering the plants in the garden. They didn't hire a gardener; he took care of it himself. And one day, the Talmidim said to him, "You know, Rav Shiva, it's beneath your dignity to go around watering the plants yourself. Let us do it for you. It'll be our greatest kavod to be able to help you." And he said, "No, you don't understand." He said, "When I was a young man, I used to take a walk with Rav Chaim Eiser. And he used to take a daily walk, healthy, you know, get some air. And I used to accompany him on his walk. And very often, Chaim Eiser was a genius. He knew everything. And he would often point out different things along the walk. And he would say, "Oh, you see that? That's poisonous. That berry is poisonous. And you see that? That's an herb that's actually quite delicious. And that you can turn into something that's nutritious." And he would point out all these different things as they were walking through the forest. And he said, "Oh, that would give you a major stomach ache." And he was telling him all of this information. And, you know, Rav Gustman had no idea why he needed to know any of this. But Rav Chaim Eiser was telling it to you, you listen. You don't ask questions. So he would listen. He says, and after the Nazis invaded, and Rav Gustman's life, I mean, if you ever read, there's a wonderful biography, actually, about Rav Gustman. It took till, I think, 30 years after he died till they wrote a biography of him, but it's really unbelievable. After the Nazis invaded, Rav Gustman said, "I was forced to live in a forest for a full year when I was on the run. And my only nourishment was from the plants that I found, and I was equipped with the knowledge to survive thanks to those walks that I took with Rav Chaim Eiser. Now I have to come to Eretz Yisrael. I planted each kind of plant that sustained me during the year during that year that I was running away. I planted each kind of plant in the garden of the yeshiva, and my hakar satov to these plants demands that I take care of them, that I don't allow someone else to take care of them." And you think to yourself, that's sweet, but the plants don't care. And if you never would have planted them, they wouldn't have cared either. They don't have feelings. And what all of this points to is that Hakaras HaTov isn't really for the recipient of our gratitude. What it's much more important for, the person who really benefits the most from Hakaras HaTov, is us. And perhaps the biggest raya to this is the requirement that we have to have Hakaras HaTov to the Ribono Shel Olam. You know, the Medrash wonders, why does the Kodesh Baruch Hu insist on Mea Brachos? He needs us to stroke his ego so much, you know, that he needs us to tell him how great he is 100 times a day. But it's not for Kodesh Baruch Hu, obviously. Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't need anything. Kodesh Baruch Hu is completely independent. That's how the Meshech Chacham explains. The Torah tells us, that next to the Mizbeach, you're not allowed to plant any trees. And the Meshech Chacham explains, because a tree, plant life, needs nourishment in order to grow. It needs sunlight, it needs water in order to grow. Mizbeach is Mizbeach Havanim. It's a stone. It doesn't need anything. It is what it is. The idea of Mizbeach is we're bringing a korban to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we are likely to make the mistake that Hashem needs us to bring korbanos. That we're like giving Him something. We're providing Hashem with nourishment. No. The Mizbeach is Havanim. The Mizbeach is totally independent. It doesn't need anything. Not only that, that which requires nourishment has no business anywhere near the Mizbeach. Don't plant an Asherah Kaleitz. Eitzel Mizbeach Hashem. The Mizbeach has to imbue in us that sense and that knowledge, that absolute knowledge, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs nothing. So why the need for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And ultimately we see clearly, it's for our own benefit. It's so that we can become better people, and not just become better people, become happier people. Because when a person has Hakaras HaTov, and this is really the upshot of the whole thing, in order for a person to have Hakaras HaTov, you have to see good. A lot of times people are very cynical, and we, you know, I'll give you a mashal. Last night, my shul in North Woodmere is building now. We're building a new building, and it's almost done. And for the first time, the outside lights of the building were on this week. So at night, like, it looks like a construction site, and then at night, the building lights up, and it looks, like, really nice. So a former president of another shul in the neighborhood drove by last night, pulled over to the side of the road, and sent an email to me, the current president of my shul, and said, I just want to say, your building looks so beautiful. You should have so much hatzlacha in it. It's so amazing because I know what it's like. He was a president of another shul. I know what it's like. I'm sure as you're going through the building process, all you hear is complaints. And I just want you to know that it's beautiful and you should have great hatzlacha. So first of all, that guy is an incredible mensch. I'll say his name, Jordan Hillen. Unbelievable mensch. Very, very special guy. And he took the time to do that. But he took the time because of the knowledge that most people complain when something is wrong. They don't acknowledge when something is right. Hakaras HaTov demands that we look for what's good, we look for what's right. We'll always be able to find things to complain about, and we'll always be able to find things to be grateful about. It's all a matter of how you look for it. You know, there's a professor at Wharton by the name of, I think he's at Wharton, Adam Grant. He's a best-selling author. He wrote a wonderful book. I think his best book by far is Give and Take. He has other books also that are very good, but Give and Take, I think, is by far his best book. And in Give and Take, he described that research shows that it's sort of like a pitfall for lawyers, and I guess Talmidei Chacham also, that because their whole job very often is to look through a document and find the faults, so they can fall into a thinking trap where everything you're looking for is the faults and what's wrong. And you have to like be on guard for that to not become a negative and cynical person. Like, separate, that's my job. And Talmidei Chacham also, right? You're looking at a sugya and you're trying to find, like, where's the flaw in logic? But everywhere else, you should try to find where's the positivity, where's the goodness? And in our interpersonal relationships. And I'll tell you just an unbelievable story that I heard from Rabbi Maurice Lam a number of years ago. Rabbi Maurice Lam, Zichrono Levracha, lived around the corner from... No, I heard from Rebbetzin Lam, from Mrs. Shirley Lam, Yibadel Chaim Tov Maruchim, wonderful person. She is like... She's like the one of the people my wife and I admire the most in the world. Just an incredible, incredible person. She told me that her daughter Judy, who passed away a number of years ago, when she was 17 years old, was faced with the first of what would turn out to be three separate battles with cancer in her lifetime. And as part of her treatment, she had to go through very intense chemotherapy. And when she was about to take her last pill in her first bout with cancer, she hesitated. She wouldn't take the last pill. And what was bothering her? Was she finally questioning God? Her parents, you know, her father was a rabbi, and are you finally questioning, how could this happen to you? How come your friends have so much of an easier life? What did you ever do wrong? And she said, no, I'm just thinking about how I can possibly show Hakaras HaTov to the Ribbono Shel Olam for allowing me to defeat this illness. She couldn't take the pill until she knew exactly how she was going to show the proper Hakaras HaTov for the kindness that Kodesh Baruch Hu bestowed upon her. And only once she committed to bring 25 people closer to Hashem. That was her commitment. My Hakaras HaTov, I'm going to introduce 25 people to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and bring them closer. Then she was able to take the last pill that she needed to take. It happened to be, she lived several decades later, had a large family, and brought hundreds of people closer to Hashem. That's what she dedicated her life to. But think about that. A person has every reason to look at the negative. But her life was so much more fulfilled because she was looking for the positive. Our relationship with institutions is a complicated one, particularly institutions where we get to speak our mind and we are heard and it's a complicated relationship because we're very often complaining about what isn't right, what's not going exactly the way we would like it to go. But it's very important that we sort of shift our focus. There are always things to complain about, but there are also so many things to be grateful for. And you really don't have to look very far in Yeshiva University to find those things to be grateful for. The ability to grow and advance in your Yiddishkeit and your professional aspirations in this kind of context, in this kind of atmosphere. It's not something that should be taken lightly, and it's not something that everybody in the world has, and it's certainly not something that historically the Jewish people always had. The ability to grow in such a context with role models, people who can guide us, and to really set the paths for our future, to develop the friendships that you can develop here that wouldn't be developed in a healthy way anywhere else, where you have to worry about who I can be friends with, who can't I, because who knows what kind of relationship would be inappropriate. There's so much to be grateful for. And it's just, I just want to say, Ashreichem, because from what I understand, everyone here is coming, unless I'm understanding it wrong, is coming here to volunteer, to try to help Yeshiva University out, to try to help, on Giving Day, to help other people become givers, give them the opportunity. You know, sometimes when there's a need in my community for someone who can't afford food for Yantif or tuition money or something, I'll reach out to a few people who I know have the means to help. And the most common response I get is not, leave me alone, Rabbi, I give enough. The most common response is, thank you so much for the opportunity. To look for the opportunity. You're giving people the opportunity to give, and you should always be, Be'ezras Hashem, on the giving end, and always appreciate all that the yeshiva has done for you and that everybody in your life has done for you, and through that, live much more happy and fulfilled lives, Be'ezras Hashem. Have a wonderful evening, everybody.